All right, welcome to this morning's panel for the Conference on World Affairs called Ha, Just Keep Laughing. I'm Presley Church. This is my third year as a student producer for the Conference on World Affairs. And if you're interested in doing so next year, talk to Ms. Gossard or Becky in the library. They'll be thrilled to have you involved. Today, Ms. Kristen Lewis will be our moderator, so I'm gonna hand it off to her.
Good morning and welcome everybody to our panel today. At this time, if you can silence your cell phone and put them away or any other devices, that is much appreciated so we don't interrupt our wonderful panelists. I'm gonna take a couple minutes to go through and introduce each one of them using the biographies that they provided for us. So to my left is Mr. Seth Shostak. Seth is senior astronomer at the SETI, which means Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence Institute in Silicon Valley, engaged in the scientific search for extraterrestrial intelligence. He spent the majority of his increasingly lengthy life studying galaxies using radio telescopes. At some point, he realized that the hardware he was using could also be turned to the task of seeking intelligent cosmic company. He now occupies himself with the efforts to eavesdrop on alien radio broadcasts. He has written 600 popular articles on astronomy, film, technology, and sundry other innovating topics. His background is eclectic and encompasses such diverse activities as filmmaking, railroading, and computer animation. Please welcome Seth. To his left is Tai Toshiro. Tai is an author, speaker, and social scientist. He is the author of Awkward, The Science of Why We're Socially Awkward, and Why That's Awesome, in which he explains why some of the same characteristics that make people feel socially awkward can be the same traits that propel them toward extraordinary achievements. He has been featured in the New York Times, The Atlantic, Time, NPR, and Sirius XM Stars. He received his PhD in psychology from the University of Minnesota and has been an award-winning professor at the University of Maryland and CU. Ooh, go Buffs. Please welcome Ty. And to his left is Carolina Storyteller. Carolina is a Colombian storyteller performer who has researched and brought to life a wide repertoire of myths and traditional tales from the length and breadth of Hispanic and Latin America. She has been telling stories on stage for over 10 years. She has a master's in storytelling from East Tennessee State University and a master's in arts management from the Open University in Barcelona. Currently, she is part of the Texas Commission on the Arts touring roster. In 2018, she launched on iTunes and SoundCloud a bilingual storytelling podcast called Tres Cuentos, dedicated to the myths, legends, and folk tales of Latin America. Please welcome Carolina. So our format of the panel today will look something like this. Each panelist will have about 10 to 15 minutes to give their statement on the topic. After each panelist has said their 10 to 15 minutes, then we will welcome the students to the microphones at the front of the house to ask a question. And following students, if there's time, then we will allow community members to come forward and ask questions. So let's begin. Seth, if you would like to begin, that'd be great.
Okay. I don't know if this works, but if it doesn't, that's really to your advantage. You've already heard that my day job is looking for aliens, and maybe that's why I'm on this panel about humor, because if any of you have seen aliens in the movies, you notice that these little gray guys with the big eyeballs and no hair also have no sense of humor. They never tell jokes, so maybe that's what this is about. I mean, I think the hope here is that I can tell you something that will, by Monday, make you a multimillionaire, help you find true love, and raise your GPA by 3 points. But in fact, I don't know anything about, I shouldn't say that, but I'm not no expert on humor. I occasionally have been known to make a joke, but it did force me to think about what humor is, because I think we're the only species that tells jokes, as far as I can tell, right? Your cat probably doesn't tell a whole lot of jokes. They may be humorous, you put them on YouTube and so forth, but they're not telling jokes, right? Now, chimps, if you tickle them, I don't know how many of you do that, but if you go and tickle a chimp, they show their teeth and there's a reaction, but that's physiological. I don't think that they're reacting to that. Man, that was a clever joke, right? So jokes seem to be something that, you know, is kind of humor. There are various kinds of humor, of course. Humor, by the way, for those of you who are into language, anybody taking Latin? Does anybody still take Latin?
Yes.
Good. I'm glad to hear that you do that. All right. Yeah. Well, that just means moist in Latin. So, you know, words like humidity or humidor, right? Humid, all that. That's the same root word. And it's because of the four humors of the body, and that's why, you know, it refers to humor, actually. There's slapstick, misunderstanding, innuendo, puns, mimicry, parody, all this other. It's just a long, long list, which suggests that humor must be very important to us as a social species. Now, here's a theory that I kind of like. There's a fellow down at the University of New Mexico by the name of Jeff Miller, and his interest was, why did our species get smart? Right? I mean, you know, there are a lot of other species. There are millions of other species on the planet, and very few of them got smart, right? I mean, they say, I had a girlfriend who studied dolphins. She thought dolphins were really intelligent. But if you go into the school library here and look under dolphin literature, you will see it's a very small section. They may be smart, but they don't write great literature, okay? So Miller's thought was this. He said, look, you know, it's just mate selection. You look at peacocks, right? Okay, so there's this peahen sort of wandering around, and this peacock comes up, and this guy, you know, he shows his big blue feathers, and she kind of looks at them, and she thinks, yeah, well, those are pretty good, with her little pea brain. But then another male comes up, and he has better feathers, and she goes with him. Why? What's in it for her? Well, what's in it for her is the fact that if he can grow those big blue feathers, then his genes must not have too many mutations, the chicks will be healthy. That's it. Nothing more than that. So he says, well, the same thing has happened to our ancestors, if you will, right? The ones before Homo sapiens. Now, of course, you know, the males are sort of displaying and the females are kind of deciding. The males don't have big blue feathers. But to demonstrate that their genome is wired up reasonably well so that the kids will be healthy, you know, they can sing, they can tell jokes, they can, you know, make some comment, right? So that's his theory about where humor comes from. It's just a, you know, something that was developed so that you would become smart enough to attend this school. All right. Now, but humor's developed a far more interesting social context now. Abraham Lincoln during the Civil War said, you know, in times like this, if I did not laugh, I think I should die. Right? It showed how important it was to him, and then he was killed and died. But I think it's maybe just a non-threatening way of showing intelligence, right? You know, if you have a friend and you say, well, actually, Ralph over there is kind of humorless, it's not somebody you want as your friend. Why? Just because they're humorless? I don't know, but there's something to it. And it also, I think it puts our paltry lives in context a little bit. You've already heard I'm looking for aliens, but you know, we know from 500 years of astronomy that the Earth is just a little tiny speck of dirt. There are a trillion other planets just in our Milky Way galaxy, a trillion. And there are 2 trillion other galaxies, each with about a trillion planets. That's a lot of acreage. That's a lot of real estate. We're not terribly significant. And maybe humor is a way of sort of consoling ourselves with the fact that, actually, we don't count for much. All right. I don't know. Or dealing with unpleasant situations without violence, right? You know, the sitcoms where the married couple are always making jokes about one another, kind of sarcastic comments. I know you're thinking, oh, that's just terrible and you'll never do that. Well, maybe you'll never do that. But it's a way of making a commentary without threatening violence or breaking up the relationship or something. One of the things that was used to advertise this panel discussion was that humor can cure what ails you, right? Don't believe that. That's wrong. I mean, if you come down with pneumonia next week, you know, just having somebody tell you jokes is not going to cure you. Try antibiotics. They may cure you. Okay. And finally, it's valued by us, obviously, for I think all the reasons that I've discussed. It demonstrates a certain amount of intelligence. It helps put our lives in context. It gives us instant revenge, which we like. We're social critters. Chimps like instant revenge, too. They don't like that chimp over there taking advantage and taking all the bananas, you know. So we have that wired into us, right? So we kind of like people being taken down, right? You slip on a banana peel, to mention bananas, but bananas have a peel, right? If somebody slips on a banana peel, that's a form of humor called a pun, by the way. It is. You can say, okay, you know, I'm better than that guy because he slipped on a banana peel. We kind of like that. If you go on YouTube, I go on YouTube all the time, and one of the kinds of things I like very much are the revenge YouTube videos, right? When somebody, you know, kind of parks and takes two spaces instead of one, and then they come over and they, you know, they chain a shopping cart to the guy's door handles or something like that. You love that, right? It's just revenge. And as social critters, we don't like somebody taking advantage of us and the system. So maybe that's a different kind of humor. It kind of lubricates social interactions. Finally, let me just mention, I do a weekly radio show called Big Picture Science, and it's about science. But I interviewed last week, actually, a professor there at Purdue. Her name is Julia Reyes. Doesn't really matter, but she, well, it probably matters to her. but the question I was asking her is, why doesn't Alexa laugh at my jokes? Okay. And you know, Alexa doesn't laugh at my jokes. That doesn't actually distinguish Alexa from anybody else in my life, but still. Right? And so the question was, why? And, well, it turns out that the answer, this is not academic, so the answer is very complicated and so forth. But a lot of it has to do with the fact that it's very hard to define what humor is. That's really a hard job. It's sort of like defining what life is. In my biz, you know, you want to know, what is life? And when you take 10th grade biology, they go, well, life, it metabolizes and it reproduces and it uses energy. And, you know, there's a whole laundry list of stuff in the first page of your biology textbook. But you can think of exceptions to all of that. There is no good definition of what life is. Well, maybe not surprising. There's no good definition of what humor is. And so all those people writing computer code in the Silicon Valley, well, we want to program Alexa to laugh at the jokes, haven't gotten very far on that. The only thing I would say is I think you mentioned that your children actually laugh at Alexa. So, you know, maybe Alexa will be doing stand-up pretty soon.
Okay. So I wrote two books. I wrote one on choosing a great romantic partner, and then the second book was the book on awkwardness. And people said those are two very different topics, and I said I think they're actually quite similar to one another. And it turns out that a lot of the stuff that I've written about is when romantic situations go poorly. For some reason, people find that very amusing when things don't go right in romantic situations. So I'll tell you a few stories today that I tell my university students. One of the unfortunate things I think that I learned about myself is that the kind of humor that seemed to go over well was people laughing at me rather than with me, which is okay. When I started to write my second book, I thought I was joking with friends and family, and I'd say, it's awkward, I'm writing this book about social awkwardness, I think it's gonna be my memoir. And I'd start to laugh, and they'd just be like, yeah, that sounds about right, you know? So I hope this is all within bounds here, but you can just yank me if it's not. But one of the things the students enjoy the most in my undergraduate course about the science of romantic relationships is attraction. And what do you need to do something about the crush that you have? I suspect that some of you here might be interested in that topic. Now, it gets confusing, doesn't it? And I'll tell you this, and this is kind of the bad news, it never gets easier. So you never really figure it out. You think, well, when I get older, I'll know when to go in for the kiss or whatever else, and you don't. And I'll give you a good example of that. So I'm a single guy, and believe it or not, sometimes people go on dates with me. So I'm in New York City. And, you know, the women there, they're pretty fancy. You know, they're pretty fancy pants, and I don't fashion myself that way. And so we'll go on these dates, and then it gets to the end of the first date. The way it works in New York is very unromantic, but you don't drop someone off at the porch. Maybe you've had the awkward porch thing here. You know, you drop someone off, and I had a good time. I had a good time, too. Kind of stand there awkwardly, you know. That happens in New York in front of the subway stop. So there's like a big 4-foot by 6-foot neon sign illuminating your awkward moment, right? And so it's the same conversation, actually, when you get older. I had a good time, too. And then it's quiet. Now, I'm an awkward guy, so part of being awkward is I don't read social cues very well. So my friends will tell me afterwards, they're like, well, what were you thinking? And I say, nothing. There was nothing running through my mind. It was just a feeling of sheer panic. Yeah. So I'm just staring at this woman, nothing going through my mind, feeling panicked, and there's, you know, you're either going to hug it out, or you can try going for the kiss. And since I don't know what's going on, I just go for the hug. I'm going to play it safe, because I want to create an uncomfortable situation. So going for the hug, fine. This has happened actually 4 times in the past year. It gets worse, trust me. We're not even at the bad part yet. So now, in these 4 cases, the woman is texted when she gets back, which is nice. It's nice to get feedback, and says, hey, I had a great time. I'd love to go out again. And I'm like, well, maybe I missed an opportunity there, you know, because apparently she wants to go out again, so we'll go on a second date. You would think I would gather more information and more clarity during the second date. I do not. And so, end up same thing, 4 by 6 foot, neon sign, illuminating the awkward moment. I had a good time too. Silence in my brain, panic, and so I go for the hug again. And I'm sure you're just sitting there like, Ty, come on, you know, you gotta get with it. And now a second time, I'll get a follow-up text. I had a great time, I'd love to do this again.
Really?
Okay, if you want to, you know, let's go for it. So third time, wonderful time, same thing, 4 by 6, neon, good time too. Now going for the hug. At this point, it's too much. You know, it's too much to tolerate. And so what's happened is this. I find this unusual. I go to back away from the hug, and there's a lockdown that happens. So she'll just like, ugh, and I'm like, ugh, you know, really get me in there. And then I'm like, well, this isn't what friends do, I don't think, you know. And then the second move is one of the hands grabs the back of my head, and we'll get cheek to cheek. So I'm being pulled very forcefully into her cheek by her hand. And people are walking by like, what is going on over there? So at this point, in my little brain, my little peacock brain, I'm sitting there like, okay, this is not what friends do. So we need to make out. But I'm in a bit of a pickle, so you know there's some logistical problem solving that needs to happen here. I figured there's 2 options. If you have a clever third one, you can tell me afterwards, but I think there's 2 options. I can disengage from the cheek and come back around like that. That's actually the more sensible option. The second option is more friction-filled. Which is awkwardly and slowly moving your cheek across hers until you get over. I, of course, do not choose the better option. You would think after the first time I would adapt my behavior. That's a sign of intelligent behavior, right? To change my... I have not. So all 4 times, the awkward grating of the cheeks, and it finally happens. Now, this happened 4 times in the past year. I do not know. I don't know how to get what to do about this. And if you have any clever ideas, please tweet at me or DM me or something. I would love to hear about that. Now, I don't like talking about my embarrassing moments, but I have a habit of doing it. And part of the reason I think humor is useful is that it's one of the mediums in society where we can talk about very serious things in a lighthearted kind of way. It kind of disarms people, right? And so things like race or politics or things like sexual attraction are things that can be talked about more readily once the humor's kind of loosened things up, right? Because you kind of connect on this human level that, yes, I too have stood awkwardly across from somebody deciding whether or not we should go in for the kiss, right? That's a common human experience. And you all have, I'm sure, your own embarrassing moments from those kinds of things. So I love humor. I think humor is one of the last institutions in society where we can have a very honest conversation about multiple sides of an issue without getting too fired up at each other. I've used that same example of the cheek to cheek is the story. It's written down as in my Excel sheet. The cheek to cheek story is something I'll use when I talk to high school students or college students about consent. Now, you might not think that my whole debacle was about consent, but it kind of is, isn't it? And what's okay and what's not okay? Joe Biden last week, right, got in a whole heck of a lot of trouble for getting too close, for getting cheek to cheek, right? Now, he wouldn't have the same intent, I think, as my situation, but it's a complicated issue. And so making out a relatively safe place to talk about that. That allows us to get into more serious conversations, in my case, about some of the data on the topic, some of the psychological science about it, and also to get a good, honest conversation among peers about, you know, how do you navigate that seemingly relatively simple situation so that now we can talk about things that are more serious. And so I think humor is wonderful. I mean, I'm an outsider, you know. I love watching comedians. I think it's one of the highest art forms and one of the boldest things you can do. I go to comedy clubs all the time in New York. They have these underground comedy clubs. And you watch these amateurs get up there for 5 minutes and just, New York is crazy cruel, you know, to bomb in front of a crowd. And I just sit there with pure admiration. I'm like, how gutsy was that to get up in front of this hostile crowd and try to crack a few jokes. And I think the thing I really respect is when they're trying to crack a few jokes in a very thoughtful, intelligent way to try to get the audience to think deeply about some of the social issues that we face. That's just kind of my style that I enjoy. But I also say I think there's nothing wrong with just a good laugh or some slapstick or whatever else. So I'm so glad we're doing this and that you all had this as the topic. I think it's an important one for us to talk about.
One thing that I definitely would like you to take home, it's probably the smartest thing I can tell you, is that whenever you find a partner, if you're able to laugh with that partner, that's the person that you should stick up for the rest of your life. My husband believes that I'm the funniest person in the world. I don't crack jokes. I always forget the punchline, so that doesn't work with me. But I perform in elementary school and at times in middle school, and the children find me very funny, mostly because I just make a lot of faces and I do a lot of different voices, and eventually I say a couple of things that definitely kids will, you know, relate and laugh about. But just the fact that even if you don't think yourself, consider yourself like the funniest person in the world, if that person that is next to you, walking next to you, holding your hand, believes that you are the funniest person in the world, yeah, that's the person that you definitely, you stay with that person. So to get to that person, actually, I came to the United States 7 years ago. I came to do a master's in storytelling. And I came to Tennessee. Now I'm coming from Colombia, South America, and I'm coming from what is considered a tropical land. Although, yeah, my city, Cali, is tropical, but not the rest of Colombia. We all have different weathers. But I do come from a very hot city, and I came to Johnson City, Tennessee, which is in the mountains, just like Boulder. And I came on January. It was snowing, my first time seeing the snow. I hated it. My dad came with me, and he was like a little kid playing outside, his first time seeing the snow too, and he's throwing snow at me, and I'm like, stop that, I hate this, because I'm cold. But my dad is having such a good time. But at the time, it was just hard for me because I was just in the moment of doing a transition in my life, leaving everything behind. But anyway, as an international student, I was appointed to go to an international group of students so you can, you know, start making some new friends and all that good stuff. And my English at the time is not very good looking, so it's kind of, I thought it was pretty decent until I realized I couldn't understand their accent. So that made it really hard at the time. So I met some other international students, and most of them came from Asia, and a couple from Africa. Now, of course, all of us have a broken English at the time, so it's even harder for us to understand each other. But we're doing our best effort. Anyway, the university somehow is trying to push you into make those friends, make them because you'll need them. A lot of international students drop out because they just have a cultural shock. And so, okay, I decided, okay, I'm going to give it a chance and I'm going to meet one of these people. And I met this guy, don't remember his name. And by the way, this story is on YouTube. I think it's called This Is Not a Date. And I met this guy, he's from a country next to India. I don't remember the name right now. But he asked me, we all gave each other's phone numbers. So when you do that, you're thinking that everything is cool. There's nothing to fear about giving phone numbers, right? Well, he asked me one day to meet up for coffee. And I said, okay. Well, I came down and we sat down and the guy just doesn't talk. And I'm like, so how are you? I'm fine. Okay, what are you studying? Engineering. Okay, what do you like? I don't know what he said, but the whole thing is just me trying to get words out of this guy who's the one who actually invited me to have coffee. I'm like, geez, what? I mean, I thought at the moment maybe he's just shy, or maybe his English is not working that well. Maybe he doesn't even understand what I'm saying. That's a problem. I am the problem. Anyway, I tried to wrap it up and, okay, bye. And I thought that was it. He was never going to invite me to go out again because our conversation went really bad. I mean, it was just pretty much me asking the questions. But then, 2 days after that, he texted me again to go to the movies. I'm like, okay, this is awkward. I don't have anything else to do. Okay, right, I'll go to the movies. So, of course, we're going to go to the movies because the university offers free movies. And we go there. And we sit there and there's just, again, there's no connection at all. We don't have anything to talk about. And I'm just not ready to push this forward. I just want to go back home. Well, after the movies, I said, okay, bye. And he's like, it's raining. And I brought an umbrella. And he's like, I can walk you home. And I'm like, oh, really? Yeah. All right, sure, walk me home. Now, my umbrella is really small, so that made, he really took that as an advantage, and he's just like, right on me. I'm like, okay. So we went up the hill, and we got to my apartment, and I'm ready to say, okay, bye. And he's like, can I come in? Okay. I mean, it's raining, so of course I'm trying to be polite because it's raining. I think that I should be considerate. So he comes in. And the first thing he does is he lays on my bed. And I'm thinking to myself, what the hell? So I have a bottle of water on my bed and it's full. So I decide to go to the bathroom. When I come out, it's empty. The guy didn't even ask me. And like, can I drink water? No. I'm like, And I'm like, okay, so I think soon it'll be better for you to. He's like, yeah, but not yet. Okay. I went back to the room, the bathroom, and I locked it. And I'm talking to the mirror, asking myself, what is going on? If my dad knew that this is happening, He would drag me from my hair and brought me back to Colombia because this is outrageous. How in the world I have a God that I barely even know is laying on my bed, and he just doesn't want even to go. He's just not getting the hints. And I can't remember how I got the guy out there, to leave the whole thing. But it was one of the most awkward experiences at the time. And after that, I was kind of shocked I didn't want to hang out with any guys during my whole college experience, because I just didn't want to go through that. It was embarrassing and very extremely awkward until I met the one that became my husband. So when I was an international student, a lot of people wanted to be my friend or, you come from Colombia. Oh, I want to know more about it. So it was more, I thought, an interest in another culture, but not necessarily an interest on the person. So it happens that one day I was at the gym, and I finished doing swimming, and I went to the smoothie bar, and the smoothie guy was a very good friend of mine, and he would always give me extra smoothies. He would make smoothies for someone else, he would leave me some for myself, for me. And there was a guy online, and he's taking forever to order a smoothie. And it's 10 minutes, and I'm just losing it. Because I already know what I want. I want a strawberry banana smoothie. Now, my friend is not in that moment. There's another guy there. So I know if my friend hadn't been there, my friend would have taken my order first. But there's another guy there that I don't know. And this guy's taking forever, and I start doing this. He's just not getting it. Finally, he says, okay, why don't you go ahead? And so I ordered my thing, and he finally decided what he wanted. And this guy, the smoothie bar tender, whatever, he took forever making the smoothies, which gave us enough time to talk. And we began talking, and I found out that he was doing a master's in social work. He found out that I was doing a master's in storytelling, which blew his mind, because every time I say I'm a storyteller, everybody's quite surprised that that is a career. And then he asked me for my phone, and I said, okay. I'm surely he's interested in me as an international student who wants to know someone from Colombia, South America. Cool. Well, we said goodbye, got our smoothies, and a week after, I got a text and said, asking if I wanted to go out. And I said, sure. At this time, I'm not thinking this is a date. Plus, in 3 months, I'm about to graduate and leave. So I'm already in mode of wrapping things up and leaving. And when we were going to go out, I told him, how would you react?
Well, thanks for asking that question. I appreciate that. I've made many bad jokes in my life, right? And I've been on the receiving end, too, of some bad jokes as well. To answer your question to start, I think it's good just to point it out, and say, it was all funny. That actually kind of cut a little bit too deep, And you can say it in a casual way like that, in a kind of metered way like that. And I think if the person's a good person, they should back off. Now, there's a subset of people who are kind of bullies and out to be aggressive, and there's not much you can do about it.